Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on Friday, June the 11th, 2010. A USDA says ethanol is consuming corn at an increasing pace, and the commodity markets say, yeah, we know. We'll ask about the lackluster reaction and the sharp drop of the ending stocks this week on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists today are Jackie Vakes. She's with Stuart Peterson in Champaign, Illinois. Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, and Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333 and by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Let's start with this question. Mike Zuzolo, on Thursday morning when USDA released its crop production and WASDE numbers, it showed that there should be about an extra 250 million bushels of corn consumed this year and next marketing year for ethanol production. And the marketplace, while it went higher, didn't really seem to care very much. Why?
Well, I think most of it, Todd, went back to the wheat and went back to the soybeans. I think the initial reaction was, why didn't they raise the 2010 yield like most of us had thought they would, given the crop conditions report? And after that initial hit in psychology, I think the trade looked at the wheat and looked at the beans to see exactly whether the cancellations from China of South American bean cargoes and the harvest that's right upon us with the wheat, whether those two things could offset the potential corn rally or not.
Jackie Banks, why did they not react to such a big increase in ethanol usage?
Well, I think primarily when you look at the bigger picture, traders certainly can't ignore the acreage report that's coming out at the end of the month. And all of the numbers that were produced came off of 88.8 million acres. I think the trade believes we're probably trading 89 or 89.5 to 90. If you take 90, we're right back at the carryouts that we were before the report came out yesterday.
And Dan Zwicker.
The biggest problem the corn market has is too much farmer inventory. Farmers still own a large chunk of their 09 production, and until that is priced into the market, rallies are going to be met with resistance. And so I think that's the biggest problem why the market didn't really catch on fire. But with that said, we did close out the week with a reversal to the upside. We made new lows for the move, for the decline early Monday, and we did nothing but come back and close out the week higher. So I think from a technical perspective, the market now is in footing to try to put together a late June, July type rally.
Really, you're sure that there's enough corn out there? I mean, it's, what, a 1.6 carryout or thereabouts, something like that at this point. That's down pretty sharply, and I don't know, farmers have it around. That's enough to make it work?
Yeah, farmers still own a large portion of this crop. You're really surprised. I think a lot of elevators, farmers still owns 25% of his crop. And the prices are not to the point where they're necessarily willing to sell it. There's even a lot of discussion throughout the Corn Belt that farmers may actually just hang on to it and re-up it and pay for storage. So that's the biggest hurdle that we have, I think, in the marketplace is because as long as it's in farmers' hands, every time the market rallies and it does generate some sales, as the elevator buys it from the farm, farmer, it has to go in as a bearish influence into the marketplace because you have to have that hedge pressure. So that's why the old saying is as long as it's in farmers' hands, it's hard to get the market to rally. Once it's out of farmers' hands, then you no longer have that hedge pressure coming at the market. Actually, you have the opposite. When the commercial then sells it to an end user or to an export, then he's lifting those hedges, and then that gives you upward momentum. But that's the biggest hang-up I see in the corn market.
Wait, so you made a pretty good case for the farmer to go ahead and sell. But, of course, you do set in Decatur, so, so you have to wonder about that a little bit. Jackie, do you think?
Well, I think really I wasn't impressed at all with corn's action today until we actually saw Canada Stats come out with their numbers about wheat and planting, you know, between 8.8 and a quarter and 12 million less acres. Suddenly wheat caught fire, was up 10, 11, 12, and then we started to see corn actually make a move, you know. And so I think we saw some short covering that came in on that. As far as farmers selling, well, for the guys that we're talking to, you can't pry it out of them right now. No matter how you look at it, you know, they're just going, hey, I got a good insurance number. I'm going to sit back. I'm not going to worry about it. I'm going to hang on. So hard to say what they're going to do.
Your clients saying, yeah, we'll hang on too for corn?
Yeah, I think so. It seems like to me that when that 352 level held in the D's, right going into the report, and then the report numbers came out, and then the outside market started to firm up, and we got sell signals in the dollar. I think the farmer the last month, quite frankly, Todd, when I talked to him, they've kind of walked away from the markets here, and they're going to wait for 20 cents. I think 20 cents is a minimum number that they want, and I think technically they probably could get that. The next big resistance seems like a trend line at around the 386 level off D's. If we could get up to that level, I think maybe that would encourage some old crop selling of corn. The biggest thing that I keep going back to is the wheat market. Can we put in a low like we did back in 1980? This past week in 1980 was when the July wheat futures put a low in. Did what Jackie was talking about with the Canadian wheat acres, can that offset the really poor quality hard red wheat that we're hearing about and how the basis is just falling apart down in the southern plains right now? And can the wet weather that's in the southern plains that's coming up this weekend, can that help the wheat and give us a low and maybe even give the corn a little bit more up here between now and the acreage report?
Okay, I need to go back and get some history because I don't remember what year we had whole farm set-asides. Was that 80? Do you remember?
We've had set-asides all the way up until 95 Farm Bill.
Well,
big set-aside was the PIC program in 83, where we set aside probably upwards of half our corn acres.
Yeah, but for some reason, was 80 a drought year then, too?
80 was a drought year below Interstate 80.
I was really young at that point.
Yeah. But, yeah, it was a drought year underneath 80. It was a Bermuda high. It did throw the ring of fire showers up into Iowa and to northern Illinois, but below Interstate 80 in Illinois and Indiana, we had some pretty sharp reductions. And then, of course, 80 was also an inflationary type year, too, with rising interest rates trying to cool that one down.
Yeah, okay, so I want to come back to the wheat market just a bit. I know that you and I had a discussion, Jackie Vakes, earlier in the year about overages that they were paying out west for wheat, soft red winter wheat, I think, in particular, but it was in the hard red winter wheat areas. Do you think the marketplace understood what was happening in Canada at that point?
Well, I'm not sure the marketplace in Canada understood it, but I think the marketplace in the U.S. certainly understands it. I've got guys out in Kansas right now that have been told you're going to either sell your wheat across the scale. There's not going to be any storage of wheat. They're shaking their heads. They can't figure it out. And we've got historically high numbers as far as basis goes. You know, so we're down to – we went from 90 under, which is where we were about a year ago. We're at $1.30 under right now. Probably headed closer to $1.80 or $1.85. Texas is saying bad, bad wheat basis. And on the other side of it, when you look at the soft red, our clients down in Mississippi, which a month ago said they were going to get 30 to 40 bushel, are getting 70 to 80 bushel. Their basis last year was $2 under. Mind you, we had a higher futures price at that time, but right now they're only 20 under. So there's been this huge shift, and I think it's coming because of this variable storage rate that we're headed into. And, you know, there's still a lot of talk that we may see some of the hard red wheat actually move down into the soft red market if they've got bad protein levels.
Well, what does it mean to the for the producer? Anybody got an answer?
Well, the wheat market tells you to store. There's somewhere between July to July. You're up there around $1.18, I think. I don't know exactly what it called, but so you got about $1.20 almost to store wheat. So anybody that has excess storage around is wanting to own wheat. So you have kind of an artificial demand in a way. You have people that have a lot of storage around. They're bidding up to try to get their hands on the cash wheat. And what they're going to do is throw their hedges into the July 11 and just sit back and earn that $1.20 carrying charges. So it's a strange market. When you go into the export market, we are overpriced. We cannot compete with Russia or any European wheat. We do get a little wheat sent down into Central America and whatnot. But when you go to an export tender to try to sell wheat, we're not even in the game. You know, as what I mean, U.S. wheat values are just not in the game.
So wait a second. Is what I'm hearing, and maybe I'm just hearing this wrong, that the elevator system is looking at the variable storage, knows that they can make money on it, is saying to the producer, you got to sell it across the scale because we're not going to pay up later for it. I don't get that exactly, other than they're just wanting to make money off it. Did I get that right?
The way it appears to
be.
Well,
I wouldn't necessarily say that.
But
the storage rate, if the farmer wants to store it, he's going to have to pay the storage rate the market is at least offering. So, you know, it's the – but no, the farmer – I mean, the market is actually telling the farmer to build a bin and store it and make some money on return. Although, if he wants
to
rent storage,
if you're going to store it here, you're going to sell it across.
Well,
the
I wouldn't. I wouldn't necessarily say that's a blanket recommendation. I don't know what you know. That depends upon which area you're in, probably how much storage is already there being stored. Yeah. But a farmer, if you want to pay storage costs, I'm sure someone's going to rent that storage to you.
Well, it's interesting because when you look at – this is really the purpose of the variable storage rate is to try and back it up and artificially inflate the deferred prices, you know, so that you can get more convergence in the nearby. And it appears like it's doing what it's supposed to do. But I think it's going to ultimately kind of wreak havoc. My concern is about what's going to happen with storage for corn when we get that far if we do back up wheat out in the country. You know, when you look at the – if you look at the spread between July and July – being at, let's say, $1.18, that spread could go out to $1.50 because of the fact that on the 19th of this month, they're going to evaluate. And if we're over 80% full carry, which we are right now, they're going to add on carry for each month. And so, you know, I agree with you 100%, Dan. It's telling people to store. It's just whether, you know, whether or not – nobody knows how this is all going to come out in the end. Out in the West, they've got lots of problems because of a little lighter test weight, so they just didn't have enough room for storage to begin with, which widened their basis somewhat.
All right. We don't have any wheat to speak of in Illinois and not all that much, I suppose, in Indiana, so we probably ought to talk about some other commodities along the way. I will give you the wheat numbers for the week. July contract at a high of $4.49, a low at $4.25.5, a settlement price at $4.40¾. It was up 5 cents. July of next year at $5.52¼ was off a half cent. Now the corn numbers. July contract there, $3.49¾ the top. The bottom at $3.35. July corn settled, $3.49½, up 9½ cents. December at $3.71, up 11½. And I'd better catch the oat futures because they finished 33 cents higher at $2.27. You talked about oats on Friday afternoon. What's up in that marketplace?
I'm sure everybody in this studio right now was told when they first started, if you don't watch the oat market, you don't watch the corn market. And unfortunately, you know, the oats have lost their sensitivity because a lot of it's been grown, you know, up in Canada for so many years. But with this Canadian news, it brings the oats back to the table. And on USDA's weekly stocks numbers, we were down about 66% from year-ago levels in oats. So they are something to watch this week. And just to tie together that wheat-corn relationship, Todd, I think your first question was, why didn't the trade come in and buy after that friendly corn report? And I really do think it goes back to the wheat-corn spread and the fact that the wheat is going to be the thing that keeps us from getting up to higher levels that maybe producers want later.
Oh, if I remember right, Mr. Zwicker, you have a couple of horses around or used to. I'm going to ask kind of an odd question because we don't deal with horses very often here. But if you're a horse owner, do you need to book your supply of oats early on for the season?
It's already high. It's high as out of the sky. But that is the main market. That and, of course, you get Quaker Oats, I think, probably is a big buyer. I mean, the oat market is just a real thin market. It's very small. As Mike mentioned, that you know, a lot of oats is up in far northern U.S. and on into Canada. You know, as a kid, we always had an oats field around for straw. That's no longer the case anymore. So, but yeah, oats is a valuable commodity if you're trying to feed some small livestock right now.
You are listening to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Land Grant in Urbana-Champaign. That's the University of Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. We'll continue our conversation with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana, Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson from Champaign, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois, when we return in just 2 minutes.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. The first full week of June was pretty typical of summer here in Illinois. Temperatures were near normal, ranging from a degree or two above normal in southern Illinois to 2 degrees below normal in northern Illinois. The passage of a couple of weak cold fronts and attendant showers and thunderstorms helped keep maximum temperatures near normal this week. Temperatures were actually below normal in northeastern Illinois, where winds were off of the lake. Some drier air did work well south into Illinois late Wednesday and on Thursday, making for a couple of comfortable afternoons and evenings. Precipitation this week was above normal across all but southeastern Illinois, where it was less than 50% of normal. The heaviest rain fell in central Illinois late Tuesday and Tuesday night as thunderstorms developed along the frontal boundary and underneath an upper-level wave of low pressure. Amounts ranged from 1.5 to 2 inches in a band from Adams County eastward through Champaign and Vermilion counties. After some summer heat and humidity this weekend, cooler and drier weather will return to Illinois early next week. Scattered showers and thunderstorms are possible through Tuesday when a cold front will push through Illinois. The thunderstorms could be more widespread and heavier on Tuesday, but that will be followed by several days of dry weather. It looks like the next shot of rain after that will be next weekend. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to Commodity Week. This edition was recorded on Friday, June the 11th, 2010. In studio with us, Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson, Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group, and Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Let's take up the corn market in more detail. We have a price on Friday afternoon when we finished up at 349.5, up 9.5 cents for the July contract. Its high was at 349.75, the low at 335, and the December futures settled at 371, up 11.5 cents. Mike, you said Dease Corn, they're thinking about another 20 cents higher. That would be at the top end of the range, that is for cash marketing in anyway. Top end of the range from USDA's average cash price, which ended up at 390. Can we get there?
I think in the cash market it's going to be really hard because if you add 390 to the cash price, say 30 cents or 35 cents in basis, Todd, you're talking about 415, 425 futures. Again, I would say without the help of the wheat and the beans, I think that's going to be a tough road to hoe. Now, I will qualify. I think the issue in the Yellow River Basin of China has been extremely underplayed and not traded at all by the marketplace. And so if that condition worsens, I think it opens up the door for continued corn purchases by China, and that then opens up the door for that 425 level in these futures.
Yeah, it appears that on Friday, China's main grain trader may have bought another three cargoes. Did you see that of U.S. corn? And
oh, yeah. I mean, you know, they came in, that was rumored already yesterday, you know, and then they supposedly confirmed it today. It didn't give the market much of a boost right at the very beginning when it came out. But you know it's in the background. I think the traders were waiting to see if they were going to come in at the lower prices. And now they didn't come in at the lower prices. They came in at the mid-range prices to buy some more grain. So that certainly has to underpin the market. The one thing I think that producers really have to keep in mind, and it's really hard to convince people of this, but whether China comes in and buys, whether they raise the ethanol, everything else, what it essentially does is gives us a bounce in the market, which is what we usually see, and then nothing more than a higher low. You know, it raises the bottom is what it really does. And so many people are sitting back thinking that's going to drive us through the roof. It's going to give us all – it's going to give us back to $4. We're going to go there. It's going to take major weather to do that.
You agree?
As a technician, chart watcher, I would say, you know, put on your bull hat, put your spurs on, and giddy up and go until this week's low gives way. And if this week's low gives way, well, then, you know, you've been bucked off. But I think from a chartist, you're going to see them want to play the long side. And what they're betting on is that those fundamentals will come their way, and that's what we try to do in technical analysis. But now if it fails, it fails. It's going to be a free-for-all. The thing that probably scares me the most is that we've actually been swimming upstream on this decline all year, basically counter-seasonal. Now you look at the seasonals, and in another week, the seasonals begin to go very to the downside. So the question is that once those seasonals kick in, is the corn market going to just go into a free fall collapse, or is a fundamental event going to come along and allow corn futures to go counter seasonal to the upside as we go on into July?
I can't say that I really disagree with you, Dan, but I want to see him get through. I've got a trend line at 375 right now. That particular trend line held us for quite a long time. We're going to have to get through that first before I'd giddy up and go big time. Although I like trading side, I like sideways trading markets. They're kind of interesting at times.
I just like weekly reversals, and I'll go with them until they fail.
Two things quickly: the global corn coarse grain stocks, you know, are now lower than they were both last year and the year before. Mm-hmm. So that's a fundamental that is helpful. Kind of like going back to what Jackie and Dan were talking about. If my memory serves me right, other than 96. The corn market has had a very tough time really making historical highs without the beans really pumping it up. And I think that's where the beans really come in. We need some good news on the beans. I think that's where maybe some of the commodity trading funds, they added to their shorts on the CFTC numbers this weekend, obviously as of last Tuesday.
Well, they went short.
Yeah,
right?
they went short. They're net short on futures and options, the most since February now at this point. So I think that works against the idea that a big mass of investment money is going to come in. But I think during the second part of this year, if our GDP stays strong and we don't have any more hiccups in Europe, that investment money could come in. So that's why I'd like to see all three of them, like that good old-fashioned commodity fund buying that we saw in 06, 07 type thing hit the market here.
Soybeans, July contract at 952 high, a low at 926. Settlement price there at 946 and a quarter, up 11 and a quarter on the week. November beans at $9, 9 and a quarter, up 9 and a quarter. When we talked Friday afternoon, Mike, I asked you which of these commodities seems like it should have been priced the right way if you took away the economics of the world economy, the bad world economy. And you said, well, I think soybeans are probably in the right spot. And then the follow-up question, and I'll ask everybody this, first, do you think that's right? And second, if that's the case, does corn and wheat come up to soybeans, or is there something that pushes the bean market lower?
Todd, if we don't see the cash market see a lot of beans come this next week or week and a half, and we see those spot meal bids at 15 to 20 over, I don't think the cash beans are out there, and I think the beans are going to hold and the corn and wheat will come up to it.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with that. It's pretty interesting, too, when you see that China's arguing with Argentina and Brazil on soy oil, and that they've now come back and said we're going to buy soy oil from the U.S.
It's got a weekly up, same as corn. Stay bullish until the lows go.
You're there until we buck off.
He's just putting the horns on to give me a hard time.
So prove this to me. At least give me an upside shot. Where are we headed?
The sky. No.
Yeah. Same place we went with wheat a couple
of
years ago.
If you're going to be a bull, you have to be optimistic. Now, I guess initially, you know, like I said, I do like the weekly reversals. You got to play them. You got to give them a couple weeks to see if they can catch and stir up a rally and see if the fundamentals will come your way. If they don't, well, then you got to bail. But I think there's some recovery of this most recent decline that we've had is in play. And I think it will give farmers an opportunity to kind of unload some of this old crop inventory that they've been kind of hanging on, waiting on for a rally.
Oh, and I really hope that. I think what would really give us the boost is if we had any kind of threatening weather. You know, when you look at the crop out there right now, we're raising the laziest crop around because it's had a lot of rain, very, very shallow root situation, and we get some threatening weather. We don't have really any weather premium in the market anymore. It's pretty much gone. So I could see it really taking off at that point in time. Mr. Dan.
You must have got everything sold up, huh?
I've got everything covered pretty much in puts, yes. So I'm feeling okay, you know. I got puts because I want it to go higher so I can make cash sales.
There you go.
I think the beans, one of the things that concerns me on the supply side is how we put them in wet feet. And I think that may come back and haunt us in August. But that doesn't mean we can't have a break to the downside first. The biggest negative that happened this past week was that China did cancel. Was that political or did they hit a demand wall? Is their hog industry in trouble and will they have to switch from buying so much DDGs and beans to crush and to just straight buying pork at this point? I think that's a question I sure hope we can get an answer in the near future.
Go back. Where did we come up with this one? This is not something I've followed.
I'm sorry.
The hog industry. What?
Well, we've had hog problems for about 2 years in China.
And with PRRS, you mean, and Blue Ear?
With Blue Ear, PRRS.
Okay.
We had the melamine scare.
Right. I was thinking you had picked up something that the DDGs were causing a problem in the
hog
industry.
No. I'm saying that will they come off the feed grain buying and just come out and actually buy pork to take care of their supply needs or their demand needs, excuse me.
Well, I heard a different take on it, basically that China was more or less taking a break just because they're so backed up with ships in the ports. They just cannot unload fast enough. So I think once they catch up, it'll be interesting to see if they come back into the market again.
Dan, time for a final word. What do you say?
Giddy up.
There are a lot of people rooting for you.
Right? Yeah, I know. I probably got a lot of friends. That's what makes it tough. But I don't want to give the impression I'm a super bull, but I do think we do have the technical groundwork for a rally that might be a little stronger than what anybody thinks. I'm not too sure we've got our big cycle lows in place, 5.5 year on corn and a 3 year on beans. So I do think whatever kind of rally can be stirred up here, farmers need to look at strategies to protect them from the downside, but still kind of keep that upside open in case weather adversities or demand changes come into the equation.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson, a final word from you.
Well, I think it's exactly the way Dan said. You've got to take advantage of opportunity when it shows up. But also, and I know they call me the basis girl, but keep an eye on the basis, because if the basis starts widening as the market moves higher, you know you better be making sales.
And Mike Zuzula of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting.
I'd like to see it close above 460 in July wheat a week from now, Todd. That would help us put in a technical low.
You've been listening to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great day.